Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Chapter 13. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Text number 138. Text number 138. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Translation. My dear Lord, kindly hear my true submission. My home is Vrindavan, and I wish your association there. But if I do not get it, then it will be very difficult for me to keep my life. Translation. Text 139. My dear Krishna, formerly when you were staying in Mathura, you sent Uddhava to teach me speculative knowledge and mystic yoga. Now you yourself are speaking the same thing, but my mind doesn't accept it. There is no place in my mind for Gyan Yoga or Dhyan Yoga. Although you know me very well, you are still instructing me in Gyan Yoga and Dhyan Yoga. It is not right for you to do so. Purport. The process of mystic yoga, the speculative method of searching out the supreme absolute truth, does not appeal to one who is always absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna. A devotee is not at all interested in speculative activities. Instead of cultivating speculative knowledge or practicing mystic yoga, a devotee should worship the deity in the temple and continuously engage in the Lord's service. Temple deity worship is realized by the devotees to be the same as direct service to the Lord. The deity is known as Archa Vigraha or Archa Avatar, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord in the form of a material manifestation, brass, stone, or wood. Ultimately, there is no difference between Krishna manifest in matter or Krishna manifest in spirit, because both are his energies. For Krishna, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. His manifestation, material form, therefore, is as good as his original form, Satchidananda Vigraha. A devotee constantly engaged in deity worship, according to the rules and regulations laid down in the shastras and given by the spiritual master, realizes gradually that he is in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, he loses all interest in so-called meditation, yoga practice, and speculative and mental speculation. Translation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I would like to withdraw my consciousness from you and engage it in material activities. Even though I try, I cannot do so. I am naturally inclined to you only. Your instructions for me to meditate on you are therefore simply ludicrous. In this way, you are killing me, and it is not very good for you to think of me as a candidate for your instructions. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, Anya Abhi Lasita Sunyam Jnana Kamadya Anarvitam Anankulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. For a pure devotee, there is no scope of indulgence in mystic yoga practice or the cultivation of speculative philosophy. It is indeed impossible for a pure devotee to engage his mind in such unwanted activities. Even if a pure devotee wanted to do so, his mind would not allow him to do so. It is a characteristic of a pure devotee. He is transcendental to all fruitive activity, speculative philosophy, and mystic yoga meditation. The gopis therefore express themselves as follows. The devotees' excitement. Just tell me when to stop. So reading from the Great Transcendental Adventure, Hallowed Be Thy Name. The devotees' excitement grew as the time for Rath Yatra parade drew near. It was the culmination of months of careful organization and hard labor. It was also a Rath Yatra that almost didn't happen. compared with the near catastrophe of fire a few days earlier, far more serious obstacles had been raised by the Melbourne City Council. Despite an application being lodged for the parade months in advance, permission had been denied only 1 week before the event.
Hare Krishna. Best laid plans. Two mics didn't work. So as she, Kriya Shakti, read that the Rath Yatra festival was to be held. Hare Krishna. Here you go. Take it back. Take the stand too. Hare Krishna. Typical Rath Yatra snafu. But anyways, this was 1974, and we had applied for the permit for the Rath Yatra festival. Savas can relate to this, and Rameshwar, and anybody who's actually had to apply for a permit for a festival, it's always touch and go. You don't know whether you're going to get the permit or not. So they kept on, the city council kept on telling me that we were going to get the permit. No problem, you're going to get the permit, you're going to get the permit. And as the time wore on, I became more and more skeptical about the words of the city council, whether they were going to grant us the permit. So 1 week before the festival happened, Srila Prabhupada had already arrived. He had already traveled, you know, thousands and thousands of miles, specifically for this Rath Yatra festival. And so he was there, and everything was going on. The permit's going to come, no problem. And finally the city council came through with their finding. We have decided not to give you a permit to have the festival. Now, this was the third year that this wasn't the first year. This was the third year we were applying for the permit. First and second year, the Rath Yatra festival went off, you know, as planned. There was only one cart, but it went off smoothly, and everything, there was no major complaints. There was a few complaints, but there wasn't any major complaints. They kind of objected to us for having a marriage, you know, at the city square, and a fire jugger. Mohanananda was the priest, and we didn't get a permit for that. So the city council showed up Saturday morning, and they saw a big blaze going at the city square, and everybody throwing rice into it. Swaha, swaha. And the councilmen were there. What is that, swaha? What are they like? What is this? What? They came running over to me. Well, you can't light a fire here in the middle of the city square. We said, we got the permit, don't worry. And well, where's the permit? And he said, it's on file there in the city hall. You just go to the city hall, you'll find it. So we kept on putting him off and putting him off. And finally, by the time they got around to, you know, closing us down, Mohanananda had ran down the street, and the bridegroom and the bride came running the other way, and the kirtan party ran the other way, and we showed up about 2 hours later to have the Rath Yatra festival at the same place. So they didn't go for that so well. But that is just an example of our relationship with the city council. So, but there they were going to get even. They were getting even. So they strung us out to a week before the festival is going to happen. Everybody, advertising has been sent out to the newspapers. Everything's been, the carts are all built. Prabhupada has arrived. Everything is there. Everything's just on the brink of happening. And they said, we have denied you the permit to have this Rath Yatra festival. So I said, well, there must be an appeal process here. You know, and they said, yes, you can appeal, but don't think that you're going to be able to change your minds. So I said, okay, you know, I went, put on fresh tealock and had my head shaved and went off to the Melbourne City Council, you know, 1 week before Rathyatra festival, to appeal their decision not to grant us a permit to have the Rathyatra festival. So how was I going to convince them? How am I going to change their minds? Yeah, that's what I was meditating on when I was going to the city council building, which is the office of the mayor. I mean, this is like downtown. This is like Fifth Avenue, if you can imagine. Fifth Avenue, you know, the main street. And on the main street, the main structure, historical structure, is City Hall. And in City Hall is the mayor's chambers, which is a huge room, twice the size of the temple room here, all dark oak and mahogany, and all for hundreds of years they've been having meetings there, and it smelled musky, and everybody's a stuffed shirt there. And they're all sitting up and down the table, big long table across this temple room. You know, all the mayor and the city councilmen and all his attorneys and everything, they're all sitting. And I walk in and I'm sitting there in the back, and they're discussing, you know, amongst themselves, you know, why we shouldn't grant these Hare Krishnas a permit to have the Rathyatra festival. So they said, you know, and I noticed at the table that there was a whole stack of these little pink slips. And I recognized these little pink slips. They were all tickets, unpaid tickets. The city council in Melbourne, they dealt with all the misdemeanors that went on in the street. That means jaywalking, parking tickets, and chanting on the street without a permit, selling books without a permit, collecting money without a permit. So they said, here we have all these tickets, and these unpaid tickets for the last 3 years, 3 years of tickets. And the tickets are like, you know, they're misdemeanor tickets, like a jaywalking ticket. You get a ticket for jaywalking, and you pay the $10, and it's finished. But if you don't pay the $10, it goes up to $15. And if you don't pay the $15, it goes up to $20, like that. It just keeps going like that. So we had hundreds of tickets that haven't been paid for the last 3 years. So it's equivalent to like $10,000 in tickets, you know, sitting on the mayor's desk right beside him. And he said, you haven't paid any of these tickets. And you haven't paid one ticket that we've issued to you for the last 3 years. So why should we, you know, who you flaunt, our authority, by we give you a ticket for chanting on the street and you continue to chant and you don't pay your ticket. We give you a ticket for selling books without a permit and you throw away that ticket and sell books without a permit. We give you a ticket for collecting money without a permit, and you throw that away and continue to collect money. And you open up a storefront, and you're all living down there, and you built a kitchen in there, and you don't have a permit. You jaywalk it, you don't have a permit. And you didn't even pay your tickets on your car. You park your cars any way you like all over the city. You think this whole city belongs to you. So here we have all the tickets, you know. So you, who completely disregard us, you know, why should we give you a permit to have the Rathyatra festival? So I kind of gulped, tried to take a deep breath. And I was conjuring up in my mind the unofficial national anthem of Australia, Waltzing Matilda. Waltzing Matilda, Waltzing Matilda, you come a waltzing Matilda. Like that. And the verses go on like, once a jolly swagger man sitting by the billy bong underneath the boughs of a kookaburra tree. I mean, it's kind of gobbledygook, you know, to Westerners, but a swaggerman is kind of like a hobo. And he's sitting by a billy bong, which is like a little lake or a little pond, underneath a kookaburra tree, And the song goes on to tell a tale about this swagger man, this hobo, who had poached a sheep. And the constable came along and said to the swagger man, have you seen anybody around here poaching sheep? And he had the sheep stuffed down in his shirt. And he said, no, I haven't heard anybody. No, I haven't heard anybody who had a sheep around here. No. Well, dink him. And then the sheep went, nyeh. And the constable said, where's that? Where's that sheep coming from? Oh, I don't know. I don't hear no sheep. Nyeh. So the constable said, you got underneath your shirt there. So the swaggerman said, I have a sheep, but you can't have him back. And he jumped up and he climbed up into the kookaburra tree. And the constable took out his gun, his rifle, and the swaggerman climbed up higher and higher, and then he fell off the branch. He wouldn't give up his sheep to the constable. And the constable, they were the representatives of the British government who controlled Australia in the early days before independence. So he jumped off the tree and he drowned in the billabong. And he wouldn't give up the sheep. And his ghost came back to haunt the billabong, you know, forever. So anyway, that's the unofficial national anthem of Australia. So you can understand that once a jolly swagger man sitting by a billabong under the shade of the kookaburra tree. This is haunting my brain. You know, I'm thinking, why am I thinking about this song? Well, I'm hearing this very grave, you know, meeting I'm having here with the city council. I should be concentrating, meditating, and I'm thinking, but yeah, that's it. The Australians, they admire the underdog. You know, the swaggerman was an underdog. He was a poor man. He had stolen a sheep. He was hungry, you know. And the constable represented the authorities, you know. And he wouldn't give up the sheep to authorities, even though it meant death when he jumped off the tree and drowned in the billabong. So I'm thinking, that's right. The Australians, they really like the underdog. You know, they really like, and they have like an egalitarian idea of society, that things should be fair. And they have an expression. They have these strange expressions in Australia. Sometimes they say, fair dinkum. You know, something is really good, you know, or righteous. Instead of saying righteous, they'll say fair dinkum. Fair dinkum. What is that, fair dinkum? Oh, good on you. They say, you know, if they want to wish you some good fortune, they say good on you, mate. Good on you, fair dinkum. And another one is, give us a fair go. A fair go. That means give us a chance. Give us a fighting chance. That appeals to the egalitarian nature of the Australians. So I was looking there at their hearts, like right at their suit, their lapels. And I didn't think of the fair go yet. But I was looking at the lapels of their suit, and I was saying to myself, Krishna, I know underneath their lapels and their suits and their stuff, their starched shirts, and underneath it, you know, right in their heart, you know, underneath their flesh, their white, pasty flesh, you know, underneath the blood and the heart muscles and everything, you are sitting right in their heart. You're sitting right in their heart, and you can direct them to give us this permit. You know, and then I thought, yeah, Krishna, if you're in there, you're also in my heart, and you can direct me to say the right words so they'll give us the permit. So I said to the, I hadn't thought of the fair go yet. So he said to the councilman, I said, that's correct. You're correct. These are unpaid tickets. And we've neglected paying these tickets for over 3 years now. And we're at fault. It's our fault. And we've had difficulties with our parking tickets, I know that, and sometimes we chant, you know, every day, you know, without a permit, and sometimes, you know, we sell books with the number one book distributor in the world, Ramaswara, that will attest to the fact, one month, And so we were distributing books every day, you know, on the streets. Not only Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, all over Australia, but in Melbourne especially. And we didn't pay our parking tickets. And we had occupied the storefront without getting a permit. And all those things. And I said, yes, we are guilty of all those things. But we're trying to do better. So the councilmen kind of looked at each other. Oh, they're trying to do better. And I said, so do you think you could just give us a... And I use an Australian kind of accent, too. And I was speaking, you know, I hadn't lost my American accent, you know. But people think I'm Australian because when I'm around Australians, I talk like them. So I said, do you think you could just give us a fair go? And the councilmen looked at each other like that, and they go, he wants a fair go. He wants a fair go. They looked at each other, they talked to me back, okay, we'll give you a fair go. Like a miracle. And they're giving me a fair go. So they stamped the permit, and they gave me, I ran out of the city council. Hey, I got the permit. So, just because I said that, it was a fair go. So, there we are. But that wasn't the you know, they had something up their sleeve, because they thought, well, we'll give you a fair go, but you're not gonna pass, you know, the stringent laws and regulations that we have here. Because we want to see, that you have hydraulic brakes for these graphic art cars. So previously we had just employed the old stagecoach method, you know, of pulling a stick back like that and friction, you know, to slow the Roth cart down. But now the carts were much bigger, and there was three of them. And so they thought, well, they're not going to be able to get hydraulic brakes for that car. Those three cars are going to have hydraulic brakes. How are they going to do that? So Hari Suri was the Jainanda of Australia in those days, Ratna Bhushan of Australia. And he got to work. And he devised these, he adopted some brake system from a big semi-trailer. And he put them on and the Roth carts. So the night of, the morning of the Roth Yatra Festival, early in the morning, you know, I don't know how, we didn't sleep at all that day. So we had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and take the Roth carts to the site. Because the site was on a hill, coming down a hill. It was at the corner of Collins and Swanson Street, and it was right at the city square there in Australia. Anybody been to Melbourne here? Is there any Melbourneites there? Anyways, so coming downhill, they said, okay, put the brakes on. So we put the brakes on, you know, and they had their register of motor vehicle guys there, you know, cops with overalls on, you know, those are serious kind of guys, and they're cops. But they got overalls, you know, with their sergeant on their sleeve, you know. He's a sergeant in an overall division of the police. So they got underneath the Roth cart, and they're looking up, you know, the steering mechanism. They're trying to figure it out. They got them. They got them. So they said to me, all right, so you got the brakes. They work going downhill. Now get on the ropes. Everybody get on the ropes. So I said, what are they going to do now? So now, pull the carts downhill. I thought, wait a second now. We're not going to pull the Roth carts downhill. We're going to have the ropes on the back. That's what the ropes on the back for, so they don't have to be pulled down the hill. And the brakes are there to hold it. So they said, all right, okay, yeah, you got us there. So they had another stamp. They gave us the permit for Roth Yatra, that mechanical side of it all. So the legacy of Roth Yatra was being forwarded by Lord Jagannath himself, and he was arranging, because on those two words, give us a fair go, three words, changed the whole complexion of the city council. That was Lord Jagannath's mercy, the Paramatma in the heart. And this is how Roth Yatra is evolved throughout the world. We go back. We heard from Amla Bhakta the other day the whole elaborate history, of Maharaj Indradyumna, and we know from the Krishna book about the Rath Yatra festival when the inhabitants of Vrindavan met the inhabitants of Dwarka at Kurukshetra. They went to Kurukshetra. There was an occasion of a solar eclipse. And the residents of Dwarka arrived in their chariots with elephants and horses and armor clanging. And the residents of Vrindavan came at the same time to meet because they were all interrelated. And the gopis took advantage of that time to meet Krishna once again. And Krishna promised before that he had just a few more demons to kill, and he was going to take care of, and then he would return to Vrindavan. And he invited Srimati Radharani to return to Dwarka with him, and she refused. She said, I don't want to enjoy your company as a king, with all these opulence and all this grandeur. I want to enjoy you as we are now enjoying you in Vrindavan. So like that, the sentiment was there. The Gopi Bhav of Radharani expressed it. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also coming in the line of Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri introduced this Madhurya Lila, worship of the Lord. And Mahaprabhu coming in that line, he took Rath Yatra to a completely different emotional level, that anybody had ever experienced before. Because Mahaprabhu was emotionally expressing the hearts of the gopis. And when he was pulling the Rath cart, he wasn't enjoying Krishna in his opulence. Because the Rath cart was being pulled away from the opulence of the temple at Jagannath Puri, away from the Sringa gate, the lion's gate, and pulling the Rath cart down the grand road, grand procession way to Gundicha temple. The Gundicha temple was a temple not like the temple of Puri, huge, opulent, gold, diamonds, opulence there. It was a garden. It was a garden setting. Gundicha was down at the other end, and there was beautiful trees and birds chirping there. There was beautiful lakes on the way. It was Vrindavan. Mahaprabhu was taking Lord Jagannath away from the opulence of Dwarka and dragging him back to Vrindavan. And Lord Jagannath was looking at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dance. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hesitate and fall behind, Lord Jagannath stopped the Rath Yatra carts. Everything stopped. And no matter who was there pushing and pulling, they couldn't get the Rath Yatra carts to move. They brought out elephants. They brought the big strong men. The daityas came out, pull the Rath Yatra car, move the Rath Yatra car. Lord Chaitanya was dancing in ecstasy. And Lord Jagannath was waiting for him. And then one time when the Rath cart wouldn't move, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pushed it with his head. Nobody could get the Rath Yatra cart to move, and Lord Chaitanya pushed it with his head. So we have Lord Jagannath, Rath Yatra, being emotionally surcharged with this Gopi Bhava love that Lord Chaitanya showed. And then we trace our lineage through the Jagannath Rath Yatra festival in Puri, when Bhakti Vinod, our great-great-great spiritual master, great-great-great-grandfather, was a magistrate of Jagannath Puri, and he was in charge of the temple. And when his son, his youngest son, Bimala Prasad, was there, and the mother brought the son out as the Rath Yatra cart passed, and the garland from the deity, Lord Jagannath, fell on Bhaktisiddhanta. And Bhaktisiddhanta, as we all know, is the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. So Rath Yatra the Rath Yatra spirit was inculcated into the relationship that Srila Prabhupada had with Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod, and Srila Prabhupada when he was a young boy, before he had even met his spiritual master. He wanted a Rathyatra car. He was crying. I want a Rathyatra car. I want a Rathyatra car. So his father said, I can't afford this. I don't have a Rathyatra. I can't afford one. And a little old lady came walking along. I've got a Rathyatra car. I got one. Father said, what? I've got a Rathyatra car. So father said, oh, let's go see it. It was an old, little old Rathyatra car. So purchased it for him, and then Srila Prabhupada painted the Rathyatra car with his father. Decorated the Rathyatra car, painted the Rathyatra car, and he had his own Rathyatra, Jagannath Rathyatra festival as a boy before he had even met his spiritual master. You know, so Rathyatra was in Prabhupada's bones, as you could say it. It was in his bones. And we all know, we all have heard the story of Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco. Before the first Rathyatra, he was looking out the window. He was looking out the window from his apartment. His apartment was above the temple at 518 Frederick Street, up on the fourth floor. And he was seeing these trucks rumbling by here and there, going back and forth all the time. So he found out, and he said, what are those bed trucks? What kind of bed trucks? And we said, no, flatbed trucks, Prabhupada. Yeah, flatbed trucks. He said, we can have a Rathyatra car on the back of a flatbed truck. And Prabhupada sketched a Rathyatra car for Jainanda to see. See, he said to Jainanda, see this? You know, this, we can have a Rathyatra festival, and with no trouble. Balaram can look that way, Subhadra can look that way, Jagannath can look that way, you know, three sides like that. We can decorate the flatbed truck. Prabhupada was always thinking. He knew that we didn't have the wherewithal to build a Rathyatra car. You know, somehow or other, he got us to carve the deity. That's a whole other story as well. When Malati found the little Jagannath deity in Cost Plus, brought it to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, is there more? Are there more? Are there more? Yes, there's more. There's white ones, there's yellow ones. Bring them all, Prabhupada. Bring them all. So they brought all the deities to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, Jagannath, Swami, Nayanapatagami. He bowed down before the deity. Prabhupada did introduce the deity like that. The deity came. Jagannath came to Srila Prabhupada, said, Prabhupada, we have to install me right here. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is new Jagannath Puri. You know, we will install you. And, but not little ones. He said, Shamashinda, you know, can you carve, right? Malati said, yeah, Shamashinda, he's a good carver. He can carve, you know. He was still smoking cigarettes, you know. He was, Prabhupada came to visit the work site one day, and he saw there was a pack of Pall Malls sitting on top of Lord Jagannath's head. Prabhupada said, what is that? Oh, Paul, it's the cigarettes, Prabhupada. It's okay. So you can see how raw the devotees were. He's carving Lord Jagannath with one hand and smoking a Pall Mall with the other. So the Prabhupada said to Shamashinda, can you carve these big? He said, yes, Prabhupada, make him that big. So Shamashinda said, all right, you got a chainsaw out, you know, like that. And Prabhupada came, inspected, yeah, a little rounder, a little, all right. And then, because he had the small set of Jagannaths and he had them painted and everything like that. Ah, beautiful. Then he installed them in the temple with a tray with a candle on it. That was the installation ceremony. Everybody was at the kirtan, put one tray with a candle on it, and go like that around, and then everybody had a chance to do that, and then, what was it there? The deities are installed. That was the installation of Lord Jagannath. And the devotees were all ecstatic. They were coming to the temple every day, and Prabhupada was gradually introducing all the regulations of deity worship, offer the food to Lord Jagannath, you know, every morning, every noon, every evening, dress the deity. When I first came to the temple, I looked at the deity, and I thought, wow. What is that? Because I was brought up a Catholic, you know, and we're not supposed to worship idols, you know, but I hadn't been a practicing Catholic for a while. My mother used to call me up all the time. Are you still going to Mass every day? And I go, not every day. She says, when's the last time you had a confession? I said, I don't know. I forget, Ma. Anyways, so I looked at the deities and I said, oh my, what? Is this an idol? Is this one of the things they're talking about in catechism class that you're not supposed to worship idols? And I'm saying, but they look so happy and they look so, I thought, I thought maybe it's something to do with the Alaskan Indians, or the Eskimos or something. It's like a totem pole, you know, that they kind of cut it in three sections. They were like piled on top of each other, but now they cut them in three sections. Like a totem pole, disassembled totem pole. I explained it to myself like that. I said, that's American Indian. That's kind of an American Indian thing. So, and then I would come to the temple and I would go back behind we had such a small, I mean, you can't imagine how small the operation was in those days. This is back in 1967. You know, if we cut this temple room in fourths, you know, maybe one-fourth of this whole temple room was the sum and substance of the San Francisco temple in those days. One storefront. Everything was run out of one quarter of the space that we're in here now. That means the deities, the kirtan, the prasadam, the storeroom, the living quarters, the office, everything was there in one. We had a basement, you know, so one space, the one quarter of the size of this temple room. That was the operation. But anyway, so I was looking, you know, went behind there to the kitchen in the back, and I would see these people scampering in and out of the behind these curtains, these Matajis, and they were dressing Lord Jagannath. And I couldn't, comprehend what they were doing. Now they're dressing the totem poles, you know, with cloth and turbans and, you know, beads and everything like that. So that's what Srila Prabhupada was giving. And the devotees were so ecstatic. They were ecstatic. And it was a perfect, deity for that time and place. Haight Ashbury, 1967, the summer of love. You know, what could be more exotic than Lord Jagannath? What deity could be more exotic? You know, Radha and Krishna, you can relate. Man and woman, Lord Chaitanya. You know, you can relate. Krishna Balaram, you can relate. Gopal Krishna, you can relate. You know, but Joe Jagannath? Wow. Far out. Well, Jagannath was far out. So the devotees were all far out too. They were all happy and joyful, dressing Lord Jagannath, offering prasadam to Lord Jagannath. So one day they said, oh, we're going to have a kirtan in the park. So they all went out and they had kirtan in the park and they said, why don't we have Lord Jagannath come out into the park with us for kirtan? So instead of running it by Swamiji first, they just took a spontaneous idea and they said, yes, Jagannath in the park. So they got Lord Jagannath and he didn't have any clothes on or any turban or anything like that. Just brought him out and ran out with a whole bunch of people just running down the Haight Street with Lord Jagannath. They put him down in the middle of Hippie Hill, and all the hippies joined hands, and they're all dancing in a circle around Lord Jagannath. The kirtan was going on, a big kettle drum was playing, you know, Hari Grieve was playing his trumpet, and the devotees were, there was all sorts of exotic things going on there. So they ran back to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada was living up above the temple in 518 Frederick Street. And he said, Prabhupada, everybody's dancing around Lord Jagannath. Prabhupada said, Jagannath? What do you mean? He said, yeah, we brought him to the park. He's having a great time out there. Prabhupada said, no. And Prabhupada ran down the street with the devotees. And he said, yeah. And he sat down with his films of this. So you can get them from Yadavar. And Prabhupada sitting in the park, you know, sitting down very kind of sternly, you know, beside Lord Jagannath, you know, and all the devotees and hippies are all dancing around Lord Jagannath. So Prabhupada was a little bit, taken aback with the enthusiasm of the devotees, but he didn't want to squash it. He didn't want to, dampen the devotees' enthusiasm. So he said, all right, you know, you want to take Lord Jagannath out of the temple. He's not supposed to take Lord Jagannath out of the temple. He said, only one day of the year can you take Lord Jagannath out of the temple. And that is on the Rath Yatra day. And you'll take him out by himself either. You got to take Balaram and Subhadra too. All three of them got to go, you know. So, and that was the evolution of Rath Yatra festival. Then Prabhupada said, oh, build a flatbed truck. And Lord Jagannath can go this way and that way. And then next year, you know, in 1967, yeah, he had the first Rath Yatra in San Francisco. And Prabhupada wasn't there, you know. Prabhupada was on the East Coast. No, he was back in India by then. And so 1967 was there. And then 1968, we had the Rath Yatra festival. The devotees continued on. Chamashunda built this concocted Rath Yatra car. It looked like a bunch of Buddhist kind of pagoda canopies and umbrellas and everything like that. And then 1969, we had the first proper Rath Yatra cart. And Lord Srila Prabhupada came at the corner, historical corner of Hayden Ashbury Streets, and he got on the cart, and it was rainy, misty, cold San Francisco morning, you know how it is in San Francisco, and cold and rainy, and Prabhupada, he didn't mind, he sat right on the cart. We pulled the cart to the corner of Hayden Ashbury Street, and Prabhupada gave this impassioned lecture to the hippies that had assembled there about Lord Jagannath. He said, I have read in your Aquarian Gospels, there was a book in those days called the Aquarian Gospel. It was like a concocted thing. And in the Aquarian Gospel, it talked about Lord Jesus Christ, after he came down from the cross, he really didn't die. He went to India, and he went to Jagannath Puri. So Prabhupada, they told Prabhupada about that. So Prabhupada picked up on it, and he said, I have read in your Aquarian Gospel that Lord Jesus Christ, the Savior of the Western world, had come to visit Lord Jagannath in Puri, in India. So Jesus Christ, the Savior of the Western world, you know, has come to Puri, you know, the Eastern world. So now Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe, has come from India to visit the Christian culture here in the West. So that was a very nice thing that Prabhupada said. And the whole lecture evolved like that. And then the Rath Yatra cart was pulled through the park. And if anybody knows Golden Gate Park, the Rath Yatra festival in these days are a really small time as far as distance is concerned. I mean, we were the marathon Rath Yatra people in those days. I mean, if anybody here knows anything about Golden Gate Park, Golden Gate Park goes all the way out to the ocean, all the way. It's like 5 miles straight down all the way to the ocean to where the big windmill is there. We took the Rath Yatra car all the way because somehow or other we thought, well, Lord Jagannath's got to see the ocean. He took him out, and he enjoys this pastime, so we're going to take him down to the ocean. So we pulled the Rath Yatra car all the way down, and many, many, many thousands of people came, joined us all the way, and Prabhupada was very impressed. You know, and then, so the tradition was there, and later on they altered the route, and they have a little abbreviated route now to hardly work up a sweat. And the Lord, the Rath Yatra festival is supposed to evoke some power, you know, and strength and strain. It's a sacrifice, you know, jagga, it's a sacrifice. So we have to pull the Rath Yatra cart to some distance to evoke that. So anyways, the legacy is there. Prabhupada gave us this. And we have a legacy now, and it's been passed on. Prabhupada, we remember how Jayananda was the father of Rath Yatra. He was not by himself, but he was the main cog as far as, you know, getting the Rath Yatra the nuts. He was doing all the heavy lifting, as you can say. You know, Jayananda, we need this much wood. You know, all right, I'll go get the wood. You know, goes up down. See, Jayananda was a taxi driver when he first joined the temple in San Francisco. So he knew where everything was in San Francisco. He had it wired. And he knew where all the wood piles were and where all the, you know, spools for the big spools they use for the wires, for the telephone lines. He thought, ah, that would be a good way to make a wheels for these huge carts. We'd get these spools and we'd bolt them together and we'd get this wood. And we didn't have any money, so he was knocking these things off all night long, every night, before Rath Yatra festival. And somehow or other, you know, a little poor temple, one quarter the size of this temple room, we had this magnificent chariot. And the next year we got 3 magnificent chariots like that. So that Jayananda, you know, had the original drive, inspiration from Srila Prabhupada, And Narayan was there. He was a genius. He invented the telescopic raising and lowering mechanisms. So he was there. He was also one of the original people. And then I was there at the temple also, and so I got the spirit. And when I went to Australia, I helped to work to organize the Rath Yatras in 69 and 70. And then when I went to Australia, we organized them in 1972. And then when Jayananda came down to Los Angeles here, because in the beginning there was only Rath Yatras in San Francisco, only fitting, you know, just New Jagannath Puri. That's all the places we're going to have Rath Yatra. But then they had the Rath Yatra in London, and then they had the Rath Yatra in Melbourne. So down here in Los Angeles, they decided, Mukunda was here, I think, right, and Rameshwara was here, and they organized the Rath Yatra. And now it's been passed on to Swavas, and he's been loyal to this, you know. So let's read a little bit more before I take up all the time. Go on a little bit further, a couple of paragraphs.
Melbourne's third annual Rath Yatra parade was the grandest yet, and since Lord Jagannath's intimate and confidential servant, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was to be personally present, it was also the most auspicious. After an offering of delicious vegetarian food and an artik ceremony to the deities on their chariots held at Carlton Gardens, the three massive chariots rolled down Collins Street. Srila Prabhupada's car pulled up near the city square. The kirtan party could be distinctly heard in the distance. As Prabhupada sat in the car with Vaikunthanath and Satsarup, a band of fanatical fundamental Christians waving banners approached. One of them, recognizing Prabhupada, began a tirade of blasphemy. Srila Prabhupada appeared completely unaffected, exhibiting a deep gravity that amazed his two disciples who sat helpless beside him in the car. After a few minutes, when the verbal assault ceased and the parade approached City Square, Prabhupada stepped out of the car and waited. Heading the parade was the beautiful 4-meter-tall golden-colored murti of Lord Chaitanya that Domya had painstakingly carved for the parade. The Lord's long arms were upraised in ecstasy. His face was adorned with tilak, encircled by long, flowing, dark hair. He wore a yellow silk dhoti, a long, knee-length marigold garland, embraced his powerful chest. Prabhupada looked up with reverence, pressing his palms together in respectful obeisance. "Ah," he said, "this is Archavigraha." As the parade drew closer and the devotees saw Srila Prabhupada, the kirtan became tumultuous. Devotees played intricate rhythms in a new clay mridangas. Large bass drums rumbled like thunder. Prabhupada surveyed the scene like a general overlooking his troops. Behind Lord Chaitanya was Lord Balaram's gorgeous crimson and aquamarine chariot topped with palm leaf motif. Lord Jagannath's crimson and bright orange chariot decorated with conch and lotus followed close behind. Lady Subhadra's cart, a little smaller than the others and decked with a deep green, sea green and crimson canopy, proceeded at the rear of the parade. On top of each chariot, Prabhupada saw a series of beautiful golden kalashas topped with a spire and flag flanked with decorative green parrots. The chariots were hung with long garlands of carnations, colorful festoons, and multicolored decorative flags. Each cart had a marshal equipped with megaphone, 4 wheel guards, and a man to guide the steering. A separate group of devotees chanted before each cart, and 2 pujaris tended to the needs of each deity. All 3 chariots were equipped with buckets of burning frankincense. Devotees stood on the surrounding decking, armed with various auspicious substances, rose water, colored dyes, and prasad, ready to be launched into the crowds. Prabhupada also noticed the colorfully decorated life-size fiberglass horses suspended in pairs before each chariot that appeared to gallop in midair. Devotees danced, holding colored banners embroidered with sacred symbols and silhouettes of Vaishnava deities. Madhavisa had presumed that Srila Prabhupada would, as he had done on many similar Rath Yatra parades, sit on a specially prepared seat on one of the carts for the duration of the parade. Concerned with Prabhupada's health, Madhavisa had not considered the possibility that Prabhupada might want to negotiate the 4-kilometer parade route by foot. Madhavisa indicated a red and yellow cushioned Vyasasan on the front of Lord Balaram's cart. Would Srila Prabhupada kindly take his seat? But Prabhupada expressed a different desire. He had decided to walk the whole parade.
So Srila Prabhupada, in keeping with the egalitarian nature of the Australians, he wanted to walk amongst the crowd. Now, previously in the San Francisco Rath Yatra, Prabhupada always sat up on the Vyasasan on top of the Rath Yatra cart. So this was what I was used to. So I had arranged for a nice Vyasasan for Prabhupada to sit on. But Prabhupada said, no, I will walk. So all my plans to have all these carefully orchestrated kirtan parties, you know, in front of each cart went down the drain. Everybody just completely abandoned their posts, and they all came to the front of the cart where Srila Prabhupada was. And the two big bass drums were on either side of Srila Prabhupada. He said, they sounded like a herd of elephants. The two bass drums were like a herd of elephants. And there Prabhupada was, standing amongst the devotees, you know, looking up at Lord Chaitanya, looking up at Lord Jagannath. And beside Srila Prabhupada was these bodyguards. We had contacted these karate guys, Bob Jones, the dojo of Bob Jones. So Bob Jones liked us, and so he had three of his heavyweights come, and they were all dressed up in black, long black trench coats, you know, and sunglasses. And they were holding their knuckles like that, you know, down in front of there looking. They weren't chanting. They were just looking up at the rooftops, you know, and making sure that Prabhupada was well guarded. Because this was the day of the deprogrammers. The deprogrammers were running rampant in Australia in these days. So we thought that maybe a deprogrammer would come and try to kidnap Prabhupada or something like that. So we had all these bodyguards, the karate guys standing on either side. And one of the karate guys had a big black eye like this, you know, a big swollen black eye. And I had been to the exhibition a couple of days, nights before in Melbourne City Hall, and the Bob Jones himself, the leader of the dojo, was showing how these karate guys are, you know, really strong and steady. And one of their exhibitions was that he would hold an apple in his mouth, and Bob Jones would flick his chakras, you know, his nimchakras, ding, 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 and knock the apple out of his mouth. But he was a little bit too close that day, and he smacked him in the eye, in a big old swollen eye. But he was, you know, standing like that with his shades on. And when he took his shades off, I said, oh, that's awful looking. It's okay. Bob did it. So Prabhupada was there amongst the devotees, chanting amongst the devotees and enjoying it. So this is just a little taste of Srila Prabhupada at the Rath Yatra in Melbourne, Australia. I recommend that if you want to read about it in more detail, then you can get this book. You can hold that book up. It's the Transcendental Adventure, written by Korma. Everyone knows Korma, the famous cook. He's also a very good writer. So, thank you very much for allowing me to take your time this morning. Jai Jagannath, Jai Balaram, Jai Subhadra, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Ki Jai.